And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here on Highland Radio. It's Greg Hughes with you for the next 3 hours, and it's going to be another busy 3 hours. And by the way, before we get into that, if you're out and about on the roads this morning, there's been a two-car collision at the Kilross Junction. Just outside Stranall or Stroke Ballet Buffet there, and it's a busy junction anyway, okay? So if you are sitting in traffic there, there's been a two-car collision up at the junction, hopefully not serious. We've no details of the collision itself, but I do know there are tailbacks in the area, and often you'd be sitting wondering, well, what's going on there? So we hope... These things do happen, so we hope it's just structural damage. We'll keep you updated on that, of course, throughout the day. And the news bulletins, well, not throughout the day. We'll have an update for you in the next hour or so. Right, 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. If you wish to get in touch with us, you can send your WhatsApp voice notes to that number as well. If you want to give us a call, 07491 25,000, and if email is your thing, comments at highlandradio.com. If you listen to the podcast or you listen to the replay overnight, you can email and we can include your opinions in the next live show. We'd love to hear your views whenever you're listening to us. And you can also watch the show as well. If you want to go onto YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, you can watch us on your smart TV or Fire Stick if you're at home. And we're on Facebook X and live on the Highland Radio website. Lots coming up today. We're going to be finding out what's exactly going to happen over the next wee while as the conclave is formed to elect a new pope. We've got business matters with Chris Ashmore and so much more, covering all the big issues of the day, as you can imagine. Let's start with a look at the papers. The Finn Valley Voice, not enough cross-border cooperation, says Shared Island Report. We need initiatives on cross-border healthcare. We need reform of cross-border taxation. We've made some good beginnings with cross-border tourism and energy issues, but we can do a great deal more. So says last week's report from Shared Ireland Project, launched by An Taoiseach Micheál Martin. Mr. Martin established the initiative, which has crucial potential for Donegal, during his previous stint as Taoiseach. That report must have overlooked the fact, whilst there is good progress being made in terms of tourism, if you're from outside the EU coming to the Republic of Ireland and you want to travel into the north, there's you have to register and pay a charge to the British government, which I don't think is positive, but overall there is positivity there. The next few stories are, I don't want you to think I'm being negative, but they're about the cost of living, and I think it's important we talk about it, because many of you out there are struggling. Or many just about, you know, keeping your head above water, comfortable, but don't have any, you know, gathered up wealth or can't seem to save. And a lot of that is down to how much money we have at the end of the week to spend. And unfortunately, as I say, there's a trend that seems almost unique to Ireland in some of our big bills, which leaves it no surprise that so many of us struggle to make ends meet. I'm going to start with motor insurance. And this is one of those ones that's frustrating, because we've been told time and time again that insurance payouts are on the way down, that new measures were introduced that means payments have dropped year on year on year. So, I mean, automatically you'd imagine that that means our insurance, car insurance, gets cheaper, but not the case, because motor insurance premiums have shot up by 12% in just 2 years, despite reforms. Motor insurance premiums shot up in the first 6 months of last year. The average premium is now €616. A rise of €67 since 2022, new data from the central bank shows. This is an increase of 12% in the last 2 years alone. The sharp rise comes despite the government introducing a number of reforms in an attempt to bring down the cost of insurance for motorists. Among the most significant of these was the agreement by judges to lower the recommended level of payouts in personal injury cases and changes in how the Injuries Resolution Board operates. That's what I was just referring to. Well, a dedicated Garda insurance fraud unit has been set up, with changes to duty of care legislation making it harder for those exaggerating compensation claims to get a payout. The Alliance for Insurance Reform, a campaign group, said the premium hikes call into question recommendations from judges to increase the size of damages awards. The Judicial Council has recommended hiking personal injury award guidelines by 16.7%. This needs to be confirmed by government. But why is our insurance going up when Why is our insurance going up when the insurance companies are making record profits and the claims are down? The report found 1.2 million motor policies were taken out in the first half of last year. Gross written premiums for those totaled 729 million, and 93% of the policies were for comprehensive cover. So that's that. But then here comes the electricity. You know, we have wind farms all over the place. Donegal has, you know, an awful lot of wind farms, more being planned. We hear that our electricity at times, 30% of our electricity is being generated through green measures. What's the just transition for us? Where's the benefit to that? Well, our electricity bills are €350 higher than the EU average, €350 per year. So simply by living in Ireland, your electricity is €350 higher than the EU average. So that means there are countries paying much, much less because this is an average. Again, what's the explanation for this? Irish households are paying the third most expensive electricity in Europe. Germany is the costliest, followed by Denmark and then Ireland, according to the data from the EU statistical agency Eurostat. The latest figures mean electricity is €350 a year more expensive here on average than in the rest of the EU. Calculations based on the Eurostat figures show electricity prices in this country are 30% above the European average. Gas prices in the country are the fifth highest in Europe. Energy bills have shot up the last few years in this country after Russia invaded Ukraine. The revelation comes after the government set its face against paying energy credits in the new budget. Sets its face. I'm not familiar with that term. Last month, SSE Airtricity hiked electricity bills by 10.5% and gas bills by 8.4% in a move that will affect around 250,000 electricity customers and 85,000 gas customers. So it's blamed rising wholesale energy prices and higher network charges imposed by the energy regulator. But again, I shall ask, why are we paying €350 than the EU average more every single year for electricity? And then we go to your shopping basket, and we'll go to the Irish Daily Mail for this, because lots of you are reporting that the cost of your weekly shop's going up. I've seen it. I've received the messages on social media myself that people are saying, well, I thought inflation was coming down. Now, inflation, when inflation comes down, inflation still is there, right? So say, for instance, inflation is 10%, your food shop could go up by 10%, and then you go, well, it's dropped down to 3%. That seems good, right? Yes, but you're still seeing inflation of 3%. So a lot of stuff has gone up. Grocery inflation has more than doubled over the past 12 months. The price of shopping, basket staples, milk and meat, they're up over 10%, putting a further squeeze on family budgets. Price inflation in the supermarket stands at almost 5%, compared to a year ago when inflation was at less than 2.4%, according to Kantar, which monitors thousands of prices every month. Despite ECB efforts to bring inflation under control, families are really starting to feel the pinch from the spiralling prices, said Michael Kilcoyne, chair of Consumers Association Ireland. So the worst price increase is sirloin steak, up 2.10 or 12% per kilogram. A fillet of cod is up 10.5% per kilogram. Full fat milk is up 28 cent or 12.5% per litre. Onions up 9%. Tea bags up 13%. And on it goes. So your weekly shop is increasing all the while. By the way, the most popular supermarket in this country is Dunnes. Second is Tesco. Third is Supervalue, then Lidl and Aldi, which I wouldn't have put them in that order. But anyway, I suppose it depends on where you live and geography. So there you go. Like, I'm not being negative. It's just that we talk about it. So, I don't know, between grocery inflation, the rising cost of insurance, the excess we pay on our electricity simply for being Irish, it seems, you know, that's probably well in excess of €1,000, €2,000, depending on your family size. So it's not a bit wonder things feel tighter. The Irish Times this morning, Taoiseach Micheál Martin has accused Israel of war crimes over blocking aid from entering Gaza. Speaking at the Global Ireland Summit in Dublin yesterday, he said it was simply wrong in principle and in law to inflict hunger and suffering on a civilian population, whatever the circumstances. This behaviour clearly constitutes a war crime, he said. Mr. Martin said it had been more than 50 days since food, medicines and other essential supplies had been allowed into the area. Israel is continuing a humanitarian blockade and is pushing Gaza closer to a hunger crisis. This is a man-made famine, effectively. Mr. Martin said Ireland remained convinced that the implementation of a two-state solution was the only way to establish lasting peace. But we know Israel now is intent on going in and taking Gaza over indefinitely. Never have we been further from a two-state solution. I'm just wondering, as I read this next story, and I think we're going to speak about this a little later on. It really starts from a story down in County Cork, but I think it really applies to all of us across this country and beyond. And that's people filming tragic instances and sharing online. Or in fact, maybe filming things rather than calling an ambulance or the Gardaí or calling out help. And I'm just wondering, have any of you been affected by this and want to talk about it? We're going to be speaking to a Cork family or the friend of a young Cork lad that died. And he's looking for a law to be introduced to make it illegal, a crime effectively, the filming of tragic events to be outlawed. Now, as I say, I know this could be very difficult for some people listening, but maybe this is something that happened to you or someone in your family, and you might support this campaign, and maybe you want to speak publicly on it. I'll read the story, but if you do, 08660 25000. The heartbroken family and friends of a man who drowned want the filming of tragic events to be outlawed. Luke Hyde died after getting into difficulty after swimming across the river from Pope's Quay to Lavitt's Quay in Cork last Wednesday. His pal made it across the channel, but Luke got into difficulty as he neared the quay wall and disappeared beneath the surface. Some onlookers began recording and live streaming the tragedy. Kellyanne Payton said Luke's family and friends are absolutely heartbroken following the tragic death. She said the decision by onlookers to film Luke, 33, while drowning was gut-wrenching. And that would stay with you, wouldn't it? That the last moments of someone close to you were being captured by video or being live-streamed, even worse, perhaps. His friend said there are four life buoys on each side of the river and nobody helped, but instead they videoed. So, as I say, we've seen situations with road traffic collisions and other instances as well where people, rather than help... I'm not sure what the rule is in this country. I certainly know in I believe it's Portugal, it might be Spain, that it is a criminal offence not to offer someone help if they are in difficulty. Maybe we have something similar here. I'll check that out. The Irish Sun and all the papers report today that Armagh All-Ireland winner Aidan Nugent appeared in court yesterday accused of sexual assault. The 30-year-old ace was charged with four offences, all alleged to have been committed against one complainant on November 17th, 2024. Nugent faces two charges of sexual assault, two of causing or inciting a person to engage in a sexual activity, namely contact with his genitals. A PSNI detective said or told Armagh Magistrates Court sitting in Newry that he believed he could connect Nugent to each of the rapes. Now, I'm not sure of that terminology. You see that in all reports, it seems, as it relates to court cases in Northern Ireland about connecting someone to the charges. He's denied the charges. He says anything that happened was consensual. And you might remember that story doing the rounds last November. And lastly, Gerry Adams continues his case in the courts. And Gerry Adams has said IRA membership was not a path I took, as he was quizzed about his past comments and Republican links during a libel trial. The 76-year-old said an attempt was being made to smother the jury in history. So as he was asked to recall events during the Troubles and the peace process, the former Sinn Féin leader said he would not speculate on IRA members or its rules while in the witness box as part of his defamation case against the BBC. Asked if there was no official record of IRA membership, and Mr. Adams said he supposed there was not. It wasn't a path I took, he said, adding that he instead joined Sinn Féin. He also told the court Sinn Féin was not the political wing of any organisation and said that the claim the party takes orders from someone in Connolly House is ridiculous. It's quite interesting that that's what they're talking about, because Mr. Adams gave evidence for a fifth day as part of his defamation case against the BBC at the High Court in Dublin. I won't try and paraphrase what the case is about. It's not in that. I know what it is about, but obviously because it's ongoing legal proceedings, I have to be somewhat careful. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call if you wish, and 074 91 25,000. We're joined on the programme now by Anna. Hi, Anna.
Good morning, Greg, and how are you this fine sunny morning?
I am doing good. The weather is beautiful. It might dip a little bit at the weekend, but more high pressure building next week, so we've more fine weather to look forward to.
Great. Well, yeah. We'll enjoy it while it's here.
We shall.
Great. Now, what I actually came on to complain about sort of fades into nothing when I measured it against the events that happened at the Doe Farm Village on Saturday last.
Understood.
Could I say that my heart goes out to Pat and Magella, because I have brought people from all over the world to the famine village from the cruise ships that docked at Greencastle. And my God, how they enjoyed every minute of it. Mm. So it's just so, so, so sad for to think of what work now will have to go into getting it back to what it was. It was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's that. But my complaint was, first of all, Greg, was about cyclists on the main road to Derry on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Myself and a friend were going on to Derry, and we noticed a line of traffic in and around the Ture area. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the area down there, mm-hmm. but around the Ture, there's a beautiful, beautiful greenway from Quigley's Point right up almost to Muff.
That's right.
And there were four... The line of traffic was being held up by four cyclists out on the main road, mm-hmm. not on the greenway. They were out on the main road instead of being in where they should have been. And that was... they didn't even go into single file. They didn't even go into single file to allow the traffic to pass. And there was a line of traffic behind them. So I just thought that I was... would mention it here, because the money that was spent on these greenways, I mean, what was the point in spending all that kind of money if it's not going to be used for the purpose for which it was constructed or built or whatever you like?
Well, 34, not for this one particular stretch, but €34 million was being spent on greenways between Donegal County Council and Derry City, and this was lauded. You know, I think it's about 5 kilometres, if I'm not mistaken, as, you know, a jewel in the crown for the area. But it's frustrating, isn't it, for motorists if it's sitting there somewhat idle while cyclists are out on the main thoroughfare.
Yes. They didn't even go into single file to allow the traffic to pass. They were in twos.
Is it possible that they might have been in their Tour de France gear and all that kind of stuff? €6 million, by the way, €6 million, this Muff to Quigley's Point greenway cost, which is quite a lot of money. Is it possible that that's for leisure cycling, Anna, and that these guys, and they could be boys or girls, you know what I mean, that these were sort of like semi-pro sports kind of riders and they didn't want to take their bikes onto the leisurely path?
Well, I don't see why not, because, I mean, I don't know if you've seen it or not. Mm. It's wide enough for four cyclists.
For sure, it's beautiful, yeah.
It really is. It really is. At first, I thought to myself, what a waste of money, like, you know, this type of thing. But when you see it completed, it really is nice, and it's a beautiful area for people who have prams and things like that, or if people just want to go and sit and look out over the foil and that. It really is beautiful. I have to congratulate them. They really made a lovely job of it.
I think, though, maybe you've hit on something there in that, you know, there could be pedestrians on it or people walking prams. A lot of these cyclists, you know, they could tip along at 30, 40 miles, kilometres per hour, and maybe it's safer for them on the road than on the greenway?
Well, these seemed to be leisurely cyclists anyway. Mm. They certainly weren't taking part in a race or that.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just trying to make sure I don't get into trouble with cyclists, Anna, you understand. I think most people right. listening would okay. would agree with you. I'm not trying to be argumentative, don't get me wrong. There is another element to that stretch of road as well, and that's safety, Anna. You know, it is quite kind of dangerous stretch of road. Unfortunately, history has told us that. So, again, maybe that's another element to your argument that should be considered, that you know, cyclists two or three abreast, there's obviously a significant danger to that, as well as a disruption to the traffic.
Well, that's my grudge over for okay. the day, Greg.
Right, Anna, listen, we'll see what others think. Thanks so very much indeed. 086 60 25,000. Anna saying quite clearly herself there, €6 million spent on this greenway between Quigley's Point and Moff. She's travelling at it the weekend, and traffic being held up behind cyclists not using it. Should there be a compulsion, do you believe, for cyclists to use it? Staying with the roads, and we talked about scooters yesterday, and this listener says, I was very interested to hear Garda Grainne Doherty talking about e-scooter use. I've contacted the Gardaí in Letterkenny by phone and by email on a number of occasions in relation to e-scooters travelling on footpaths around town. I regularly walk around the town and inevitably see e-scooters travelling on footpaths. It seems to me that the law re-e-scooters travelling on footpaths is not being implemented here. I've narrowly missed being knocked down twice. I think this would make a very interesting topic to be discussed on your programme. And of course it is something, and that was Mary text that in, it is something that comes up from time to time. I suppose you could argue that the information piece we did yesterday, trying to get the absolute rules of the road out there, were is part of the campaign. But I know what you're saying. Enforcement is what's needed, and if there is enforcement, I suppose the message doesn't belong getting around. Some of your comments coming in so far this morning. Why are the Gardaí at Strand Hotel? Are they new security for the business people? I don't know what the story is there. I do believe some of the parking around that facility has been blocked overnight, and it might have been used by adjacent businesses or locals. I don't know what the ups and downs of that are. I imagine it's private parking, and I suppose whoever owns it can do with it what they will, however they might choose to do that. Greg, why do you always refer to truthful facts as being negative? Truth is truth. It's got nothing to do with being negative. That comes in from Mary. Mary, I suppose it's just, if you're on about the newspapers, I suppose just when you're kicking off the show, and sometimes I'll be conscious that maybe listeners think that all we talk about on the show is negative stuff, which is not true. You know, we platform an awful lot of different stuff and lots of positive stuff as well. And I suppose I was just a wee bit conscious this morning that I was going to be starting off with three negative stories in the newspapers. But I take your point. The truth is the truth. So I was literally just explaining that that's the God's honest truth as to why I said that. Hi Greg, I was sent by NowDoc to get my ankle x-rayed. I arrived at the ED at 8 p.m. last night. I waited all night and I've just been called this morning at 8:30 a.m. I live an hour's drive away from the hospital, so it's been a long night. I can imagine so, and I hope it's not broken. I'm not really sure of the ins and outs of that. I believe I covered this story in the past and I'll get clarification on it. Is it possible that the facilities or the staff that do x-rays actually don't come into work? Their next shift is at 8 or 8.30, and perhaps maybe you spent the whole night there with no chance of being called. I seem to recall a story about a purple room or something. I'll double-check all of that, or maybe someone in the know will let me know. Concrete bollards have been put up around the Strand Hotel in Ballyliffin. Yes, I just referenced that, and I've got a lot of videos of that from people in the local area. Ironing boards in Lidl in Donegal Town, Greg, get one on your way home. Okay, are they the little ones or the big ones, though? I don't really need a big one. But also, what do I do with my old ironing board? What do we do with our own ironing board, I should say? Is it not... It's the one of the smaller ones. I don't think it's retrievable, but it's a big piece of metal and it's going to... You know where it's going to end up, the side of the house. I started feeding my dog tuna. There were worms in the can. I told the shopkeeper and he told me that was natural. What? Worms in a can of tuna? Was it like for human consumption or is it dog tuna? Pardon my ignorance, I don't have a dog. Please, I want more information on that. Was it like a regular tin of tuna and there were worms in it, or is there specific tuna for dogs and are worms in that can normal? In any case, that does not sound right. The hotel and main central car park in Ballyliffin has been blocked off with huge concrete bollards blocks overnight. I feel sorry for the villagers of Ballyliffin, which was always a scenic escape for us townies and city folk. I've seen them. They don't look terribly pretty, I'm not going to lie. Greg, that's no excuse for a shirt that's not ironed properly. I've the same problem with my iron board cover and ironed for an hour yesterday. No creases. You didn't. That's not true. Not if you had the same problems as me. And don't listen to Lee Gooch either. My shirt's ironed fine. And he wears fleeces, so he doesn't have to iron, or old woolen shirts that he gets that don't require ironing. So at least I'm trying. Okay, listen, thanks for all of that. Our next guest's going to be joining us on the show in just a moment. Stay right where you are. Now, we are joined on the programme by Paula Leonard, CEO of Alcohol Forum Ireland. Paula, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, yesterday, we learned that there seems to be a loophole in the law whereby non-alcoholic beers can be sold to minors in pubs. Now, there's two things going on here. Is this actually happening? Or, you know, has someone found a loophole and made a story out of it? I find it hard to imagine, although anything's possible, isn't it, that adults are bringing their kids or young people underage into a bar and buying them a Heineken 00 or Guinness 00. But we can't allow that to happen, surely.
I think, first of all, the question you first asked is it happening? And we would believe anecdotally that it is.
Right.
And we would also know that Ireland's not the first country for this to be happening in, and for it to be causing sort of concern from, you know, parents, also from the licensed trade, actually, because they're saying this is a really confusing issue. Essentially, the global alcohol industry is really pushing the low and no alcohol products. They're pushing the advertising of it as a way to get around, you know, any restrictions on advertising. But also, they know very well that young people are now using it as a gateway drug. It's initiating people into the taste of beer, the look of beer, the holding of a pint, looking older, aspirationally. It's something that young people now are doing.
And I suppose too, Paula, as you say, you've alluded to it a little earlier on, right? So, you know, if you are a young rugby fan and all of your heroes are running across Guinness 00 and you can access that, you know, and then potentially become a alcohol drinker, you can sort of see what's going on. It's, you know, are they targeting our kids?
Absolutely, they're targeting our kids, and they're targeting them with the marketing very much so. And there is some research that's just coming out in Australia to say that young people can't and don't differentiate between the advertising of low and no alcohol products and alcohol products. You know, we're also seeing them, you know, the Irish government took very strong action to remove alcoholic products from the main, you know, corridors within our shops and our supermarkets. But now we're seeing the low and no just outside of those gated areas where they're in full view of children. And in fact, the advertising of them is very beautiful. You have these sort of neon blue, you know, fridges and everything. They're very attractive to the eye. They're very attractive to young people. And young people, we know, first of all, we know that advertising and marketing impacts and imprints on their brain in a different way. And we know that they differentiate very poorly between sort of products and brands. Brands are more important to them in terms of what they can see and what they can identify and know. So I think it's a real concern, and I'm really welcome the fact that Alan Kelly has raised this as a question, because it very clearly lies with the Minister for Justice, no matter how difficult it is. It does lie with the Minister for Justice to sort of, you know, legislate for that, or at least make a statement saying. And essentially, you know, for example, Guinness 00 is Guinness, was brewed as Guinness, was brewed as alcoholic Guinness, and then the alcohol's taken out later. So the taste piece of this is really key in terms of young people. And I think it's very hard for the licensed trade to have to sort of you know, be the guardians for that or make judgments for that without any sort of instruction or guidance from the Department of Justice.
Yeah, I'm not sure how true it is, but I was told once that the big push for the ice cold beers was because it deadened the taste and, you know, for new drinkers, they might be more inclined to try it. So that was another approach that was for the general population, but particularly appealing to young people because alcohol, actually, I don't think, you know, Guinness, Smithwick's, Heineken, whatever it is, I don't think it actually tastes particularly nice, certainly not the first one in any case. I think, too, also, and I'll put this to my next guest as well, Paula, I think license holders deserve a bit of clarity in this regard as well, because what is their position on refusing? Because as you say, you're not the only person that's heard anecdotally this is happening, so we've... If someone tries to order a Guinness 00, for an example, for a 14-year-old, can the bar owner legally say no?
Yeah, I think it's really unfair, actually, to have this sort of confusion, both for parents and for the licensed trade. I think both, because, you know, parents, there's such heavy advertising and marketing of the 00 at the moment. You know, we're on today to talk about the serving of those drinks to children and under 18s. In licensed premises, but what's actually happening in homes? Do you know what I mean? So we have a whole generation of people now where their parents don't have guidance around whether or not these, you know, drinks should and could be served at home.
Some parents see it cute for a rite of passage 13, 14, 15-year-old having an alcohol free at a family barbecue? I don't know, actually. I never thought about it from that angle.
And like what I do know is that, you know, a lot of people who are in recovery from sort of alcohol substance use disorders would avoid low and no alcohol products because they feel like triggers. You know, they taste the same, they look the same, psychologically they seem the same. So if you take that and you think about that through the eyes of a child, you're doing something that is habituating you and socializing you into, you know, alcohol being a normal behavior and a normal piece of life that we should be engaging in. And I think it's very worrying, but look, I think it's timely. These things will always come along to challenge public health and to challenge legislators. And sometimes there's a lag. And I think, you know, the guidance from government needs to catch up. Yeah. I'd be interested to hear what your next guest has to say on it as well.
Indeed. And that's Councillor Martin Hawley, who's chair of the Donegal Vintners Federation and a bar owner himself. Martin, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Morning, Greg. Morning, Paula.
This is not something I understand that you've been asked, but members have reported that it has happened.
It has happened in different places throughout the county and nationally. And I know it's an issue. I know the national conference is on next week, and there is a motion at national conference next week for the Minister for Justice to clarify that. Because there's a grey area, and unfortunately some of our members, I came up for school, one of our members was that people came into the premises and the parents of the child asked for an alcohol drink for the child, and the bartender refused them and they all left. So it was put the public in a very awkward situation. We have realistic as well, I think, Paula, you mentioned as well there, like you take some of the drinks, it's not 0.07% alcohol in some of those drinks. You know, so there's still alcohol in them. If they're under 18, you shouldn't serve them alcohol.
Yeah.
So like it's a perception as well, Greg. You take it, if you were in a bar and you've seen a young teenager, and you've seen a bottle of Heineken from a distance, if you're walking past,
you wouldn't know the difference.
It could look like a bottle of Heineken. Yeah. Normal bottle of Heineken. So it's a perception for our members as well.
But I suppose, Martin, if they were drinking it out of a pint glass, you may have no way of knowing.
You may have no way of knowing. And the next time they go up to the bar, they could hold their hand over the 00 and say to the bartender, give me one of those.
Yeah.
And the bartender looks like any, don't realise it's 00. Yeah. So it's a perception. And we have a duty of care as bar owners and bartenders. We have a duty of care, and we'll be told that by the courts as well. If somebody is taken to court, we'll be always told that we'll use a duty of care to the people coming onto your premises. So we need clarity on this.
And this motion that's coming up next week, that would have been sort of put on the agenda some time ago, would it?
Well, I'd say in the last, like, the motions would have had been in, I'd say, for about 4 weeks ago, four to six weeks ago.
My point is, and credit where it's due, whilst this story is sort of broken from a political perspective, it is the industry itself, the regular members that actually were seeking to put this on the agenda.
Yeah. Well, it'll be coming in from some of the counties that had the issues with this. That's normally the way it works. Each county would put in a few motions if there was something that was important at the time that they feel needs to be discussed. Plus, the other thing that's come up as well is vaping in bars. I mean, that's another issue that we want clarity on as well.
Say that one more time.
On vaping in bars that we want. We would like the Minister for Justice to come out clearly on that as well, because we don't actually know what's in vapes. I mean, we have no... There's no historical evidence as to what's in vapes, and I'd be worried about that into the future as well. So,
could that become the next passive smoking for your staff or yourself, for that matter?
There's a possibility. I mean, we have no... I mean, as we know, it took many years to take first cigarettes for banned in bars till we realised the damage that it was doing to staff and to other customers who weren't smokers. So we haven't got that historical evidence on vaping as well. So that's another issue that
conference. I know your focus is on alcohol, Paula, but there is a crossover there in that, you know, vaping, fruity vapes and all that kind of stuff, a gateway to, you know, tobacco addiction or nicotine addiction or tobacco usage. And is that what we're seeing with 00? 00 has been great thing for adults and stuff, right? But thus the way it's being marketed, and they have to look at the next generation coming through. I think you described it as a gateway a little earlier.
I think it's really a good point, you know what I mean, Martin has raised, because public health does play catch up. So industry looks at, you know, what are the new ways of selling any product? And the tobacco industry has moved into sort of vaping. And Martin's absolutely right, getting the ban on, you know, tobacco and getting the plain packaging and getting bans on advertising, all of those things took a very long time. But now we feel that the evidence is unequivocal. You know, we absolutely, everybody on the street is able to tell you the link between smoking and cancer. So now public health is going to have to play catch up again. And parents are looking for clarity around vaping. And schools in particular are looking for clarity around vaping. Because, you know, Martin's absolutely right. There isn't an ingredient list. We don't know what's in them. All of those things have to be addressed. And I think actually it would be very timely for the Ministers for Health and the Ministers for Justice to have a joint discussion on, you know, the products that are sort of moving faster that the industry is pushing out and that we now need to play catch up on.
Just on the vaping,
the two good examples.
Yeah, on the vaping, Martin, too, I don't know what the guidance is, but, you know, if you look around, you'll see people who might discreetly vape and you wouldn't even know they were, and then others that blow smoke rings. I was sitting in a restaurant there not so long ago, and there was three around a table, and it was like being in a disco. It didn't put me up or down, because I just get on with my own stuff, if you know what I mean. But I can see where the problem is from a, do you as a bar owner, I'm not saying in your case, but do you walk over to that table and say, look, lads, you know, but you need the rules to back you up.
And fair enough to a lot of people who do vape, they would ask you, is it okay to vape on the premises? I mean, in fairness, a lot of people would, I think since the smoking ban came in, people would ask that. And so I don't think it would be an issue if the government came down clearly and said, the Minister of Justice came down clearly and said that no vaping was allowed indoors, similar to no smoking. And I think people would get on, they would just they would go outside and vape the same as the smokers. So I think we should nip it in the bud now before it goes on too long, before another generation gets into it. So I think there's a time there now that we could address both of those issues, whether the 00 alcohol and the vaping.
Martin, it's been a fascinating insight because, I mean, I've come from a position of ignorance in that I just thought this wouldn't happen. I thought people wouldn't I thought they'd be afraid of how people might judge them or how it might look or what have you. But to hear that members in Donegal have been asked to serve 00, although it's 0.07, and then families or groups leaving because it wasn't served, does make you then, to your point, Paula, wonder if that's happening in public, what's happening in the home?
Yeah, and I think, you know, parents, in general, parents want to do what's right for their children. But guidance from government is really important in terms of establishing health messaging, in terms of saying, look, you know, this is the guidance in relation to 0.0. I mean, Martin's absolutely right. If it's the 0.7 within the law, you are not to serve to an under 18. I mean, that's absolutely clear if there's any percentage of alcohol in it. But I think that because they're sold as a package and everything is a little bit blurry, we need to have guidance on that. For example, on the alcohol health labelling, you know, there are pregnancy sort of issues that people need to think about, because 0.7 isn't no alcohol. 0.7 is very low percentage of alcohol.
It might be 0.07, I think.
Yeah, but it's 0.07. Yeah, but the health advice for alcohol use during pregnancy is that no level of alcohol consumption during pregnancy is safe. So even those residual amounts, these are something that we need sort of clear guidance on. And I think that we shouldn't sort of maybe package them together as closely as low and no. It should be low. We need the clarity on that in relation to under 18s, and the low, we need those health sort of messaging to be really clear on it.
Yeah.
And it's up to government, because the industry is not going to self-regulate on this.
Paula Leonard, thank you very much indeed for that. I appreciate it. Paula Leonard, CEO of Alcohol Forum Ireland. Martin, have you? Is it? How is the share of low alcohol, non-alcohol beers been growing in your average pub? If you know what I mean, I can imagine in certain places we know the popularity is increasing. But is it sort of almost measurable now that, you know, like 10% is 0.0?
It won't be 10% now, but you're probably looking up between 5 and 10.
Yeah.
I mean, possibly it is increasing. And plus, there are probably a range of maybe where you started off at the start, you would have had maybe Guinness 0.0 and maybe one lager. Now you could have, you have spirits that are 0.0.
Yeah.
You have gin 0.0 and you have different. So there's like most pubs there would have maybe 5 or 6 different varieties.
But I suppose it's good for pubs too, because people can go out and socialise and they don't have to sit, you know, there's nothing, you're drinking soft drinks or what have you. You know, and not everyone wants the effects of alcohol. That's good, but and we need to keep that for adults and protect our kids. And it's great to see the Vintners Federation sort of actually driving the agenda in this one. Credit where it's due, I think, is always fair.
Yeah, no, it is, and it's good that people, as you say, if not everybody wants to drink soft drinks, and if they can have something, they're quite happy, and they can, and it's safe to drive home as well. So,
well, one of my worst ever hangovers was Coke. drank about 5 pints of Coke. Listen, thanks very much, Martin. Take care of yourself, as always. Thanks. And Paula Leonard there, CEO of Alcohol Forum Ireland. Martin Harley, of course, a councillor, but he's chair of the Donegal Vintners Federation and a landlord, I think is the phraseology, himself as well. We asked the same question on social media. It's a difficult one on social media, I think, this kind of a question, because you might have one opinion and then, you know, if you are in favour of it, you might not want to post it on social media for in case of backlash. But generally speaking, Jeffrey, Niall, Margaret, Louise, Lorna, Dolores all said no. Margaret was of the view yes. So the majority of people saying no. And I'm not one to judge. I don't know. But I mean, parents... You know, some parents are of the approach that they, a teenager of a certain age in the house, a little bit of alcohol to get them used to. I'm not judging anyone. I wouldn't judge anyone. But I think a situation whereby, you know, young people going into a pub and getting into that scene, even though they're not getting drunk, it doesn't feel right to me anyway. Greg, it says 0.0 on the bottle. Who's lying? But there's draft. You wouldn't know 0.0 from not 0.0. And the bottles are pretty similar. It wouldn't be hard to obscure the 0.0. Oh, sorry. I beg your pardon. I know what you're saying. I presume 0.07 is technically 0.0 because 0.0, then the 7. So I would say there's a couple of ways around that. It's a tiny amount of alcohol, but it is alcohol. There's probably, you know, you'd probably get higher readings eating white bread, if the truth be told. Okay, so interesting one. Want your views on that? 086 60 25,000. Give us a call too if you prefer. 07491 25,000. Tom, yours is a situation that unfortunately a lot of people find themselves in. You can't build on your own land, and we are desperate for houses.
Yeah. Well, it was my wife had texted on yesterday.
Right.
But she said maybe I'd go on and talk instead.
That's okay, isn't it? So what's your situation? You're a young family, there's six of ye, and you would like your own property and your own land.
Yeah, well, that's it. Hey, we're renting this last 11 years in this household. And, well, we're probably lucky enough to have somewhere to rent under the current circumstances. Mm. But, hey, at any time that the ones that owns this house could say, we're going to sell it, we're going to bump the rent up again or anything, you know. So we had a plan for in 2019 for the council to do your SI housing.
Yep.
On your land. But we got through all the lot of documents and stuff done, but there was no money at the time for the SI housing. So somebody advised us we just try and get some planning on it to start with. So we went ahead and tried to get a bit of planning, and we got vision line signed from the neighbouring farmers and all, you know, and actually knocked down a wall and rebuilt a wall back from it to make the vision lines good and all and everything. And that was all right. Like, things kind of settled down a bit. There wasn't much word then. It was kind of a bit of to-ing and fro-ing from the council. But we eventually had a local councillor on board as well. And we eventually got them out to view the lot of ground, and they said it's not ideal because it's behind. That's my wife's sister has a house at the front, and then the next bit of land's behind that. So they said, well, it wasn't ideal because it's behind, but they might be able to make something work. So we thought,
your sister-in-law has no objections to the location of your house. That's interesting.
No, she has no objections. Yeah. No, she'd be obviously happy if we got a house of her own. But anyway, as I say, they says that's not great, but we might be able to make something more. So anyway, a couple of years later, after, I say, to-ing and fro-ing with them, we did get a letter out then last year, August 24, to say to provide evidence on your vision lines and stuff, but we had this already done, handed in previously. So it was kind of like, that's kind of a step back again. But anyway, so we got on then to try and get a meeting to find out about this and get, so then the councillor got on them to try and get more information on it, and they did send out engineers and stuff. And then on March 25 then we got a letter back to say our planning section have confirmed that the provisional of a dwelling on the site proposed by you for the SI cottage is considered contrary to the policy set out in the development plan. So basically we're not even sure, does that mean zero, no chance at all? We've been trying to get through to the council since, and the phone you've passed from here to there. We're trying to get a meeting with them to find out, like, does that mean no hope at all?
Yeah, or is there something else you can do?
Is there something else we can do? But
and is this in a rural area or close to a town, Tom?
Yes. I'll tell you, it's in Remelton. We're just under 5K outside the town.
So, if you were able to progress with yours, that would free up the house you're renting for another family. As you say, in a housing crisis, it doesn't make a great deal of sense. Listen, we're right up against the 10 o'clock news, Tom. Thanks for that. If you can sort of relate to what Tom is saying, or if you have any insight into that, please do let us know.